welcome to Ray and Tay Today. It's Friday. Woo! Come on.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and thank you for joining us on the show. We're going to have some fun today. 718-664-9098. Give us a call if you want to talk some sports with Ray and Tay today. And like always, shoot us your emails. You want to chime in of the big topic of the day, your top 10 NFL running backs in history, who you think is number one, because Ray and Tay, we're going to give it to you. You can send us your emails at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Tweet at us at rayandtaytoday. Like us on Facebook. Hit us up at rayandtaytoday.com. Get at us, Ray. What are we talking about, man? We got some hoops too, huh?
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. So we'll talk in breaking news. We've got some stuff going on. We got a settlement, or A-Rod deciding to drop his case against baseball. Good news. We'll go around the world of sports. We will get into some college basketball talk. We'll get into some pro basketball talk. We'll touch on the Olympics. And we've got the end of the show, the end of the football season. We figured we got a couple more football topics that we need to talk about. Ray and Tay got to get off their chest. So we're going to go through the top 10 running backs of all time. We'll talk about the guys we think are top 10 running backs and the guys that are knocking on the door. So where does your guy, where does Adrian Peterson, where does he fit into that? And these up-and-comers, you know, where does a LeSean McCoy project out to be in 7 years, 10 years? So a lot to talk about, and let's jump off with some breaking news.
Well, tell them what A-Rod decided to do. I mean, it's not major, but we might as well talk about it.
Well, look, I think it is a big deal that A-Rod backed down from his lawsuits, because it's kind of weird that a player would be suing the players' union.
Usually,
the union's protecting the players, and the union and the player, their interests are almost always aligned. So we have A-Rod.
He doesn't want to get beamed if he ever plays again. That's all.
Well, shouldn't have filed the lawsuit in the first place.
I know.
So, yeah, so he drops that. Another sad story that came across the wire is there's a defensive end from Cal who died. This guy named Ted Agu. He died. He was 21 years old. He was training. I guess they're getting ready for spring ball.
Yeah.
And he just collapsed and died. So our hearts go out to the Agu family.
Rest in peace.
And Cal, the program, and I just hate to see that.
Yeah, and then on the other spectrum of that, you know, this is someone who lived a long life, 91 years old, the home run hitter and broadcaster, locally everyone knows him in New York, Ralph Kiner, passed away this week for the Mets. So always loved Kiner's Corner. Remember that after the Met games? So, you know, people who know about him, you know. So he lived a great long life. So, you know, hey. It is what it is. So I want to ask you real quick. Are you watching Sochi? I can't lie. The Winter Olympics, you know, all the politics, whatever. Forget about that, right? You know, it's a sports show. Whatever, Putin, whether you like him, don't like him, what do you think about Russia, whatever. But I think when it comes down to it, you can sort of be standoffish sometimes, I think, sports fans, with summer or Winter Olympics, or you're not in the mood or you're not ready. But once it begins, it's exciting. I can't wait for hockey. Last night I'm watching the ice skating, and they're doing the team competition, and I'm watching Russia. And Canada was amazing, and, you know, China, Japan, you know, and Germany. But, you know, Russia, they're trying to restore their glory of, you know, dominating from, like, what, the 68 to the 04 Olympics or 06 Olympics. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure for them to win, you know, back in ice skating. And I think overall Sochi and the Winter Olympics, it'll be what it'll be, but I think it'll be exciting.
I will watch the Olympics. The opening ceremony was at 11 a.m. They'll play it again tonight. You know what it is? I still have that little boy sense of amateur competition, And so the hockey is great and it's fun, but I actually like to see the 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds doing, you know, figure skating or freestyle skating or
speed skating. Jump. Fun
love
too.
Ski
yeah.
jump. Speed skating.
I love ski jump.
You know,
remember the Mayer brothers in downhill skiing? Phil and Steve Mayer for the U.S.
Yeah,
for all those years?
And
they
it's
were great.
Funny, they had a 30 for 30 with Bill Johnson on it, so it was pretty sad to see what happened to him. Because he was the man in 84 in Sarajevo, and then
mm-hmm.
eventually 20 years later tried to come back, and he had some brain damage, and that was terrible. And what's interesting about the Olympics is they had a stat that the Olympics 20 years ago had some 46 or so medal events, and now it's up to 92. So they've added so many more medal events, and now they're doing
all the snowboarding. Yeah,
which is
yeah,
funny. Yeah,
they're
bringing
night.
The X Games into the Olympics, and then team snowboarding or team skating,
yeah.
which is
some of
great
it I like,
because
some of it I don't like though.
It's a lot like the gymnastics, where you can compete as an individual, but you also competed as a team. Whereas before, the skating was only individual, and then you
right.
had. You had Tonya Harding-type issues with Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding.
Yeah.
But if they were teammates, that would have never happened. Right?
No, you're right. But you know what? I gotta tell you, though. I disagree with you with the aspect of the professionals in hockey, because I always say we don't do much NHL on our show, but we definitely like the playoffs and we talk about it. But I think the best hockey in the world is Olympic hockey. It's so much fun. They don't fight and they just play. Olympic hockey, people, please watch it. It's amazing.
Yeah,
I'm excited
hold on, we got
that.
A caller here. Let's see what the caller wants to talk about. Caller, you're on the air with Ray and Tay.
Hey guys, Mike in Pittsburgh. How's it going?
Hey Mike, what's going on?
What's going on, Mike?
Well, not much. I just wanted to talk about a few of the issues tonight you guys are going to go to, especially the all-time running backs. Well, I'll put it to you like this, guys. The best running back I've ever seen is Bo Jackson, hands down. Now, if you're talking longevity, obviously he doesn't, you know, come into the equation. But for one game, just pure talent-wise, I've never seen anyone with that power and speed ever on a football field. And you've thrown the fact that he'd come into the football season after playing, you know, all summer long in baseball. It's kind of like we were robbed, guys, of about 5 years of seeing one of the – it could have been one of the best of all time.
Well, you know what's interesting? Bo Jackson, for us and our generation, is like the older people's Gale Sayers.
Exactly.
Gale probably had a few more years than Bo, but still, he was cut short. So he was one of those guys where everybody says, or in basketball terms, you know, Bill Walton. Everybody says, oh, if Bill Walton hadn't had the bad wheels, we would have been able to see him. And it's a shame. And you look back and you're like, really, Bo Jackson on a freak accident, no less, in the playoff game against Cincinnati, you know, messes up his hip and you're thinking, oh, it's just a tackle. But, yeah, we, you know what? It's funny because we talked about our list a little bit, and Bo's not on our list, but yeah, we'll put him in there in honorable mention because, you know, you have to have a certain number of years and a certain number of, you know, yards and maybe championships behind you. So
I
but,
love Bo.
Yeah, Bo was great. Bo was fantastic. So let me ask you something. Sitting there in Pittsburgh, but being a Dallas fan, so what you know, what do you think about some of the big heavy names like an Emmitt Smith or, you know, Franco Harris
or Tony,
you know,
Dorsett.
Where do you rank those mm-hmm. guys? Tony Dorsett, where do you rank those guys in your top 10?
I'm going to be on. You guys know I'm a diehard Cowboys fan, and I love Emmitt Smith. He's the all-time rushing leader, but I'm going to be objective here.
Yeah, he's definitely not the best.
If he wasn't behind one of the best offensive lines of all time.
Yep, the Great Wall.
Yeah, and then you have a great tight end, a great receiver, where you couldn't, you know, put eight in the box. So, you know, he's in my top 10, but I'll give you one that I think's a little bit overrated that I know you guys are going to jump on me here, and that's Barry Sanders. Now, exciting-wise, he was the most exciting. He probably had the most talent I've ever seen. But if you needed a few yards – and, you know, in a cold weather game off of that turf in Detroit, I've seen him had fail many times. I've seen him play Green Bay, Chicago, where he'd have minus 10 yards rushing because he was always trying to cut back and, you know, make the big run. So as far as excitement level, yes, but he wasn't a good, you know, runner for if you needed that 1 yard in the middle. That just wasn't very
good.
Yeah,
but you know what, Mike? In 9 years, he put up 15,269. That's crazy. I mean, when you look at the all-time list, it's crazy.
Yeah. They had stats where Barry Sanders would have something like a ridiculous number, like 20 or 30 runs for negative yards. So he did dance around a little bit in the hole, but once he hit the hole. But Mike, back to your earlier point, what would happen if you put Emmett's line? So if he had Newton and Stepnoski and Larry Allen and all of these guys.
Eric Williams.
You told him run forward. Don't run backward. Jimmy Johnson would say, don't lose yards. Just run
forward. That's the thing. That's why I'd rather have Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders, because Dallas's offense was predicated on getting 3-4 yards and keeping it in third and short. If Barry Sanders does some of his juking, you know, and you put him in the second and 15, that kind of ruins the, you know, the Dallas type of offense. So I think Barry Sanders is more talented, but Emmitt Smith, the one thing people forget, how good of a blocker he was. A blitz pickup.
For Troy,
A receiver, just the whole package.
Three down back, for sure.
So, Mike, then let me ask you this. So if sort of saying what you're saying about Barry and Emmett, then that leaves two guys clearly probably for number one for you. Who would you take, Walter Payton or Jim Brown, is the best running back ever in the NFL?
Well, that's a good list there. I want to tell you what. Obviously Jim Brown is the older back. Even for our age guys, it's someone we've never seen other than on tape.
Tape was ridiculous.
Yeah, the thing about him is he was the size of the linebackers and defensive linemen back in that day. So I'm going to go with Sweetness, and I'll tell you why, because he played on some very bad, terrible Chicago Bears teams, but yet
he
still ran his heart out. You know, he had the numbers there every year, and I'll say this to my dying day. I blame Mike Ditka for letting him score a touchdown against New England back in the Super Bowl and giving it to the refrigerator Perry, because if anyone deserved that, it was Walter Payton. There's not anything I could say bad about him. He was a true professional, ran his heart out.
That's fair. I want to ask you one more question, Mike. Where would you rank Eric Dickerson? We know he's got the most, and AP, you know, was 9 yards short. For one season, Eric Dickerson is the best. And, you know, he's sort of definitely in my top 10, whether you put him at, you know, 6, 7, wherever. But where would you put Eric Dickerson? Because I think he's amazing.
His Rams days or his Colts days?
No, his whole career.
But now, be fair. 10 years, he gave you 13,000 yards and change, so.
He's right up there, you know, in the top five. The only thing, the problem Eric Dickerson had is, you know, his Rams couldn't make it, you know, to the Super Bowls because those great defenses with the Bears and then the Giants, you know. So he would make it there, his team, you know, to the end, but he just always would run up against one of them defenses. But, he's definitely in my top five. You know, that 1 year he had, you know, obviously he broke the record. So, I'm putting him up there.
You know,
there,
it's fascinating. We talk about quarterbacks, and we always talk about rings, but I don't think rings with running backs are as important, you know, when you're comparing. I mean, when I look at, someone like a LaDainian, you know, who never got a ring, but, you know, I didn't like what he did in the playoffs, but when you watch LaDainian play, I mean, LaDainian Tomlinson, I think in some way has become underrated. I thought he was a great player. And then Marshall Faulk, who I, you know, have sort of right there at 9 in my top 10, I think Marshall Faulk, not underrated, but he does have the ring. But Marshall Faulk, for a smaller back, was so amazing, catching and running. You know, that versatility that you see nowadays from Shady McCoy. Would you put any of these young guys that are still active, You know, obviously Steven Jackson has the most yards out of any active back. He's number 20 on the list. But would you, projecting out, would you say an AP or potentially a McCoy, you know, one of these guys could potentially make the top 10, top 11 backs, Frank Gore, one of those guys?
Oh, only Adrian Peterson. That's the only one.
Above
everyone else. And I don't know, looking ahead with his injury situation, how much longer he has. But if anyone stands out, you know, it has to be Adrian Peterson. Just, you know, from the eye test alone, he looks different than all of them.
Well, you know what's interesting about running backs, and in complete contrast to quarterbacks and receivers, is that the game has changed so much now that all the receiving, maybe even Jerry Rice's records, but all the receiving and all the passing records are in jeopardy because of this new trend of offense. However, that means that people are running less, and the games are a little bit shorter. I think you run a few fewer plays now because they have the running clock. Even when you go out of bounds, they set the ball. They stop the clock, they set the ball, and then the clock keeps running. Other than
although offenses, you know, are moving faster to get more plays. I mean, look at how many plays.
Some of them are.
You
it's
know,
not, it's
the
not
Patriots,
the case for everybody. But I guess my point is that the running backs are able to – I think the running back numbers are going to be pure. So not pure, but they're not going to be inflated, right? You won't have 22, 23, 2,400 – yard back seasons just because you just can't withstand that kind of beating. So in that respect, I think that the numbers that we see put up by Emmitt Smith and you know, Barry Sanders and Walter,
oh, they're all safe,
Walter,
yeah,
are relatively safe. You know, a guy like even a guy that looked like he was projecting to go far, a guy like Arian Foster, you know, he got hurt. And there, and then 2-3 years, he had 2-3 great years, and then suddenly he can't stay healthy and stay on the field. So I think that the running back, unlike other offensive positions, their numbers are going to mean something.
Hey, guys, can I throw one more thing out there before I go real quick?
Sure.
Definitely.
I know we got a Knicks fan I'm talking to on the line here.
Oh, yeah.
Both.
It's both of us.
Both, too. Okay.
They better not fire Woody. It's ridiculous.
Do you guys think it was the worst thing for Carmelo Anthony to put up over 60 points and be named Player of the Year in January? Now it's kind of like, what does Bill want to do? Does he want to keep him around? It's kind of like a catch-22 with Melo. When he goes on these streaks, you know, he looks like the best player in the league, and you want to keep him, but then you lose to Milwaukee, and, you know, and you start he starts kind of losing focus. And then it goes back to the old Carmelo. I'm just kind of...
One more thing to add to that, and he'll probably raise ticket prices again sometime before the end of the season. So you want to do that with Carmelo on the squad, right? You can't trade Carmelo and then raise ticket prices. So
yeah, but they don't do it during the season. They always increase prices in between the season.
No, they did it.
Season.
They did it with after Jeremy Lin had his big game, big set of games a couple years ago. They raised ticket prices in season for the next season. So
look, it's not Melo's fault. I mean, let's be honest. We watch the games. I mean, you see these guys. Besides J.R. Smith, and that night J.R. had 30 and Melo had 36. But you know, Amari doesn't get enough minutes, and he's been playing better as of late. But nobody else is putting the ball in the basket. Shumpert, Felton has had one of the worst seasons of his career. And it's just, I feel like Melo, he's on his own. He's on an island, and I think he's actually having a pretty darn good season. I think Melo's playing pretty good this year, actually.
But my point is a good point that ultimately this might tie Dolan's hands to re-signing him. Look, I think that – I actually agree with – I was listening to Stephen A. Smith on ESPN. I think you got to trade him. I think a sure thing is to trade him, because if he's sniffing around, I think what he'll come to the conclusion is that he's in his 10th year, and he played in New York. He went back home. He played in Denver. He won
the
title as a rookie, as a freshman at Syracuse. And he doesn't have a title in his future in New York, certainly not in the next 3-4 years. So, to me, you're going to do what LeBron and all those other guys did at that point in his career, even earlier in their careers, and go get a title. So I don't think he comes back to New York if it's up to him. So I think the Knicks have to move him. I think the Knicks have to get something for him. Just like Denver got something for him, the Knicks have to get something for him.
That's what the clock's running. I mean, they literally have, a couple weeks to do it, if not.
Well,
you know,
I'll tell you this. If they're going to get something, take a first-round pick from the Suns, take the Dragon or Bledsoe, get the Okafor contract, maybe take Alex Len and, you know, ship out Melo, and if you could, you know, be lucky enough to drop off Amari back to them or another contract. but I'm serious. Go get, like, because I think Bledsoe and Goran Dragic have both proven that they can play the point and excel. They're both young. And I'll take, you know, their first round pick, the one that's, you know, not protected, or, you know, the Laker one, and, you know, go from there, and then a salary you can dump in a Mecca Okafor.
Guys, if we could turn back the clock, wouldn't we want to never do that Amari and just let the Suns have him? I mean,
yeah.
What a disaster.
Hey, but Amari, listen, it's not Amari's fault. You know, like, actually, I respect Amari so much for – he came here when no one else was going to come here. LeBron sort of, you know, abandoned us, whatever. He, listen, for the first half of the season with him and Felton and all those other side pieces of Chandler and Gallinari, Amari Stoudemire was MVP for the first 50 games that year and was playing great. So to me, I give him a lot of props for making New York relevant again, even to be able to get a Melo. So I can't knock Amari. It's not his fault.
Without that leg injury, guys, you know, he at the time he was a top five player in the league before that leg injury. He's another one that, you know, we never saw the best of, because if you remember that one year he got thrown out, I think it was in Game 7 against the Spurs. I think Phoenix would have won the championship that year with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hip check.
They had a shot.
Yeah.
They had a shot. You're right.
Thanks.
All right,
for
Mike.
Time,
thanks
guys.
For calling, man.
All right, Mike. Have a great weekend.
Too.
Well, listen, I mean, we can go either way. Mike brought us, you know, there. You want to circle back real quick? Let's circle back real quick and just talk about these just a few games in college basketball this weekend and that are really noteworthy. What, 23-24, or is it 24-25, Memphis, Gonzaga? Should be kind of interesting, you know, style-wise, to watch these two teams, you know, go after each other. And then Michigan and Iowa. I mean, what are your thoughts about those two matchups? Wisconsin, Michigan State, although Wisconsin's out of the top 25, I think that's going to be a great game as well. What are your thoughts on the college basketball weekend here?
So I think there's some big games. I think that February it starts to get serious, right? Up until February where it's all jokes. but at February time it starts to get real serious. You know, there's quite a few games that are you know, on the horizon. I think next weekend is a better weekend.
Yeah, next weekend's huge.
Right, you got like Florida, Kentucky, and some other games that look real good. But look, you've gotta start building momentum. So this week we've got Michigan, Iowa on Saturday, 10-17. Mm-hmm. That's a great game. I think Iowa, you know, was looking really good a couple weeks ago, and now they're coming back to earth a little bit. Michigan almost dropped out of the top 25 and came roaring back, and now they're a top 10 team, 9-1 in the Big Ten, could run away with the Big Ten. So that's one I'm looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to seeing Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, just to see if Oklahoma State, what team are they? Are they really a top five team, or are they a bottom of the top 25 type of team? So those are the real, you know, games I'm looking for. Again, people need to start building momentum.
You don't want to see St. John's upset Creighton, baby? Our boy,
Storm. Oh my God! St. John's. You know, I got St. John's in my heart forever. But
recruit again?
I don't know who it is to come in there. Either take a New York City kid that really, really wants to stay home. They need to build better facilities. But they need to build better facilities. That's the problem. Is that you're in Queens, so that's fine. Local kids, you play at Madison Square Garden, but you don't have great facilities. The facilities out in St. John's are not that good. So
right.
I hate to say it, because you hate to say that there's a race, as an arms race, but there is. There's an arms race to build facilities. That's why all those big football schools win, because they build these tremendous training facilities and these tremendous places to play. They're like these little, you know, palaces. And I guess the other great game on Sunday is Michigan State, Wisconsin. Wisconsin was a top five team, you know, 3 weeks ago.
I know.
And Michigan State also.
Well, this game is
gonna... Actually, that was 4-5 3 weeks ago,
yeah.
And now it's 9 and unranked.
This is going to save their season if Wisconsin can win this game. Not that they wouldn't make the tournament, but for them to sort of be in the place where they can get a top-4 seed or a top-5 seed, Wisconsin has got to win this game because they're sort of right out of the top 25, but they lose this game to Michigan State, Ray, and Wisconsin is... You know, and I love Jackson's kid and Bruss, but they really need this game. I think Wisconsin has got to step up big. So let me ask you this. What do you think about, as I like to say, how many Pelicans are out there peddling? NBA All-Star Weekend, I think my boy Lillard is doing way too much, but Anthony Davis from the Pelicans, the host team and city, he is replacing Kobe Bryant. You like that? We said he probably would, and he got
it.
What
do
you think about
that? You know, he and DeMarcus Cousins are, you know, sort of neck and neck statistically, but I think his team looks better. He does more to help his team win, maybe, than DeMarcus Cousins does. So I like the unibrow. I like my man, Anthony Davis, number one pick.
Yeah, he's had some big games, and it's also local. I think it's great for the local fans. I think it's smart, you know. Hey, Adam, that's Adam Silver's, first, you know, big-time decision. You know, I think what's interesting and what's happening right now in the NBA, I don't know, and I love NBA All-Star Weekend, but I don't know what the non-NBA fan, you know, really thinks about it. Is it, like, even worth watching? I don't know if, you know, the battle of the East versus West, they, you know, are playing with the dunk contest, although this year you actually have 3 All-Stars in it for the first time in 26 years since it was like, you know, Jordan, Dominique, and Drexler. So that's kind of amazing.
Your boy Dame Lillard looks like he's playing in 5 events.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's doing too much. I don't want him getting hurt.
It's – well, do you really
you
got to
be concerned. Even though he's young, you're trying to make a push. You're right now a top – 3 seed in the West, you really, if you're a Blazer fan, you know, you're excited.
I wonder
you know,
if he's
it's
doing
not about...
that because he's in Portland and because if he were in Chicago or New York or L.A., he'd be a household name. But because he's in Portland, he's like, look, I need to take every opportunity to get on the national stage, and maybe he's going too far. And in some ways,
but he's also in his second year, so you know he's excited too. He's excited,
yeah,
too. He's in his second year. We might as well. Listen, we're old guys trying to criticize him, and he's like, yo, I got this. Skills competition, the rookie, the MVP, I got this, yo. The dunk, he's young, man. He's like, I can do this in my sleep.
Okay.
I'm happy. You got to be happy for him. I mean, that's...
Oh, I'm definitely happy for him. Great kid. Seems like, you know, a great kid, and he deserves it. He's one of the most – I don't know about his dunking ability, but he's certainly one of the most skilled.
No, he's only a one-hand dunker, yeah.
Deserves to be in the rookie game for sure. Deserves to be in the All-Star game. He can shoot. We know he can shoot. So, hey, I would do 4 out of the 5. I don't know if I'd have him in the dunk contest.
Yeah, I think the dunk, we've seen that it gives guys a little slow start to their second half. Real quick, what are your thoughts about, you know, look, Popovich, he was funny last night with David Aldridge, actually talking to him, you know, doing the sideline reports. The Spurs got the number 2 seed right now, playing great ball, 36-14. But, you know, every time they're on TV, you know, no Duncan, no this. I mean, they're banged up. You know, the back-to-back, he rests their guys. We spoke about it off air. What can you do about it for competitive balance or just for the kids or the fans that he only comes to Brooklyn once this year, the Spurs, and you want to see Duncan and Parker, and they're not there?
Especially at the end of their career, because Duncan, how
well,
many
yeah, you might not ever see him again.
Have a year
I'd
two,
be pissed.
Maybe?
Never
so,
seen big fundamentals?
I don't know. I don't know what Adam Silver does. I don't know what you can do. Everybody's acting rationally. That's the thing. You know, Popovich knows his players, and he knows they break down, and he knows that an 82-game season is a long season. And Adam Silver, but I still think Adam Silver needs to do something. Maybe he needs to find them. Maybe they need to tell you, you know, more than 24 hours in advance, because you're right.
You shouldn't be able to do it if it's a city that you only see once. Or I don't know. I mean, I guess you can't make guys play as a league. I don't know. Let me ask you this. We spoke about it a couple weeks ago, and then guess what? It's happening. the Memphis Grizzlies are moving up. They've gained a couple of games. They are right now 26-22 and catching up to Dallas, who's 29-21. It looks like, you know, for the West, that Memphis might be the one team to maybe move up and catch Dallas, you know, maybe not catch Phoenix. But then in the East, Ray, I don't know if the Knicks, who are like 2.5 back or what, I don't know if the Knicks can catch the Charlotte Bobcats. And Ray is going to, ladies and gentlemen, let's cheer for the Bobcats, because what Ray's going to do, he's going to take his butt down to the NBA store in Manhattan. He is going to buy a Charlotte Bobcats either jersey or T-shirt, and he is going to put it on and tweet it out, because he strongly put his fist on the table and said the Bobcats will not make the playoffs, and Kemba Walker and the boys, Al Jefferson, they're doing it. Michael Jordan, stand up. 22-28, here come the Bobcats. I think it's great.
The Bobcats have played 50 games. So that's pretty good that they're 50 games into a season and they are the eighth seed. Behind them are Detroit, New York, Boston, and Cleveland are really the only teams that are within five games of them.
Oh, Cleveland's a mess.
I don't know if Cleveland is going to recover, so they're a mess. Boston had a great November, and then they've been a mess, and they've known to tank before and try and get people. So
yeah,
really,
so
it probably
Detroit
comes
or the Knicks.
Boston and New York. Detroit and New York.
Detroit and New York, yeah.
And I still would put my money on both of those teams ahead of Charlotte. So they're only 2 and 2.5 games back, so I my money's still in my pocket. I'm not buying that Charlotte jersey just yet. Still have 32 more games.
Okay, look, let's stand up for a good guy right now and a great coach. The Knicks, they shouldn't fire Woody, should they? It's not Woody. This isn't Woody's fault.
Well, not only should they not fire Woody, I'm not sure. Well, look. See, Woody and Carmelo are going to be attached at the hip, so you got to figure out what you want, and ultimately Carmelo's going to have a big say in whether Woody stays or goes. Even if you decide to fire Woody, which I think they will, I'm not saying they should, but I think they will fire him at the end of the season.
Who do you bring in?
What's the point of firing him now? I mean, the Knicks are a team going nowhere unless you were to able to pull a rabbit out of a hat. But who
Phil
is
Jackson.
That rabbit? I don't know who yeah. that is. Phil Jackson's not coming to New York. He's dating.
No, I know,
Buzz.
But that's what I'm saying.
You
he's
know,
the only
so,
rabbit.
Yeah, so really just let him play out the season. And more importantly, forget about Woody. Figure out what you're doing with this roster. Figure out what you're doing with this roster of people that suddenly the parts don't fit. Last year they fit great. It was D's and 3's for the first half of the year. And now they don't even give you effort. I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed as a Knicks fan, but I don't think it's Woody's fault. And even more importantly, I don't think there's a solution, you know, midway through the season. So let Woody play out the year and then figure it out.
So let me ask you this. Are the Sixers driving too hard of a bargain? Rumors are, you know, talking some NBA trades here, rumors are that the Sixers, to move Spencer Hawes, who I've been saying that Golden State and Portland should acquire, to move Spencer Hawes or Evan Turner, that they want in return a first-round pick. Are they bugging?
Evan Turner was the number 2 overall pick. So they deserve – and he's playing okay. Look, I don't love his
yeah.
game as a star, but he's averaging – if I'm not mistaken, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but he's averaging like 18, 6, and 3 or something like that. So
probably one of the best
numbers.
6 men, yeah.
He's won some games. And you know what? Good for them to drive a hard bargain, right? We thought that trading Drew Holiday was crazy, but you know what? If Nerlens Noel comes back and
they get the lottery pick, yeah.
And they have their lottery pick and then New Orleans pick, you know, that's pretty interesting right there. So good for them. And you know what? I'd much rather be – and the Knicks have Carmelo, but I'd much rather be the Sixers than the Knicks. I feel like the Sixers at least have a future. They're young.
Yeah.
They're
do you keep Thaddeus Young? Is Thaddeus
kids?
Young part of that future, Ray? Do you keep him? Is he sort of a tweener? Is he sort of, you don't know if he's a 3 or a 4, even though he's had some monster games this season?
I like Thaddeus Young. You know he's a lefty, so you know automatically he gets a few bonus points. But I like Thaddeus Young, and as long as you don't ask Thaddeus Young to be, you know, Bernard King – or if you're a Sixer, you know, Julius Erving, if you just ask him to be the sixth man, so maybe that's why they do trade Evan Turner, get a starting small forward, and bring Thaddeus Young off the bench as your sixth man, then that's fine. I think he's a solid player. He's a small four and an athletic, you know, a bigger three. I think he's fine. I like his game. I just think that he was projected at some point. He almost had the Andre Iguodala syndrome down in Philly, where they were like, okay, AI is the next AI. And then they thought, oh, Thaddeus Young is the next rising star. You know, he came out of Georgia Tech 1 year, and he was the man.
Yeah.
But no, he's not your star, but he's a very good player. I think he's solid. I keep him.
Yeah, no, because you got to have pieces, and at best, Noel, with his size, is going to be a four. I don't think he'll ever be able to put on the weight to be a legit center. So you got to sort of figure out
like
there where you're going.
Spencer Hawes is okay if they can afford to.
Yeah, and that's going to be hard. I don't know. So look, let's do it. Let's take a quick Ray and Tay break, and let's talk about what Mike jumped us in, the top 10 running backs in NFL history. Ray and Tay.
Welcome back to Ray and Tay today, and we're talking NFL running backs, best of all time.
Wow. We had to do it.
An exciting, call it an assignment, right? To think about who are your top 10 running backs of all time.
Well, let me say this real quick, just in terms of pure rushing yards, because I thought Mike brought in an interesting, you know, topic of Bo Jackson. But just the top 10 in terms of actual yards, Emmitt Smith is number one. Walter Payton is number two. Barry Sanders, three. Surprisingly, people might not know this, Curtis Martin, four. LaDainian Tomlinson, five. The Bus is six. Number seven, Eric Dickerson, who's got the, you know, number one for one season. Tony Dorsett, one of your favorite backs, is number eight. Jim Brown, nine. And Marshall Faulk is 10. So looking at that, and surprised, you know who I'm surprised? Edgerrin James, who comes up for the Hall of Fame this year, Ray, is number 11. So let me just ask you that real quick, because it's not even something I thought about. Is Edgerrin James a Hall of Famer with 12,246 yards from 99 to 2009, 10 years?
Let me just say that it's a difficult question. And
yeah.
The guy ahead of him is Marshall Faulk, Hall of Famer. The guy below him, Marcus Allen, Hall of Famer. So is Edgerrin James a Hall of Famer? He won once with Peyton, so he does have a Super Bowl.
No, remember he didn't. He left. That was Dominique Rhodes.
Oh, that's right. That
and
was
Joseph
Addai. Right. He left the
Edgerrin
season
left,
before.
And they won the next year.
Oh,
doesn't have the jewelry.
That's right, because he played in
Arizona. Yeah.
No, in the 2005, that's right, the 2005 season was Pittsburgh, won, and then in the 2006 season,
he played
in
Arizona.
That's right, that's right, that's my bad. So, look.
That makes a difference.
It's so tough to say that he wasn't an excellent running back, but was he ever the guy that you banked on? Now, remember, he got drafted number four, or number three, right? Right before Coach Ditka in New Orleans traded the whole house and drafted Ricky Williams right after him. And they got rid of Marshall Faulk to go, you know, and rebuild with Edgerrin James. And then Marshall Faulk joined in the greatest show on turf. But, it's so tough.
That's a
hard
one.
I'm leaning towards no. I'm leaning toward excellent back and just outside of Hall of Fame, although he's the 11th highest runner.
I know.
Below him, Marcus Allen, Franco Harris, Thurman Thomas. Fred Taylor won't
all
make the
in
Hall,
the Hall
of,
Fame.
Of Fame. But Riggins,
Fred Taylor
OJ,
won't make it either.
Steven Jackson.
That's a hard one.
Right now,
I'd say no.
I would say no. If you had to put a gun to my head, I would say no.
So then that means, though, and he's been, you know, in the finals the last couple of years, at number six, and you realize he's number six, the bust, Jerome Bettis. And I told you, I think he's in the Hall of Very Good, but a 1,300 yards, 13,662. I mean, can we say that the bust from 93 to 05 is not a Hall of Famer? That's a lot of yards.
I was going to say,
consistency has got to be respected in some way, right?
If you're the sixth best, look, we always use Don Sutton, right? Don Sutton won 300 games because he won 15 games for 20 years. So is that a Hall of Famer? He's in the Hall of Fame, but we would argue that was he ever dominant? So you look back, and you could argue Edgerrin James was more dominant than Jerome Bettis. But Jerome Bettis is sixth all-time in rushing and has a championship.
And
so,
got them to the Super Bowl, yeah.
I think Buss is in. I think you got to put Jerome in,
okay,
and Edgerrin's out.
All right. Well, let me say this, right? Let's, you know, just, you know, we are cutting the show a little bit short today, but we'll finish this conversation out. But just so for the fans that are listening live, it doesn't cut off. Look, I got to say my number one is still Jim Brown. And I'm, you know, maybe, you know, we'll go down the list and you tell me where you agree or disagree.
I agree.
But,
Jim Brown, he
yeah.
only played nine seasons, but those nine seasons were nine dominant seasons. Every single season was dominant.
I don't know if anyone's ever dominated like that. And then I'd have to put, I agree with what Mike said. I remember we both watched plenty of playoff games. Barry did not step up. But that line, Ray, and having Scott Mitchell and Rodney Peete and you know, whatever. Barry Sanders is number two for me. I think Barry's amazing.
I got to put Walter Payton in there. Ooh, I got to say Walter Payton ahead of Barry just
sweetness.
Because he had the whole team. He got the tough yards. He never ran out of bounds. He got his one Super Bowl. And, yeah, he didn't get the touchdown in the Super Bowl, but everybody knows that was sweetness. So I got to put sweetness at number two.
Okay. I can't disagree. I have sweetness at three. Now four. This is where, you know, things get interesting because it doesn't necessarily have to go by yards. And a lot of people would say Emmitt Smith.
I'm one of them.
Okay, you have
Emmitt
Smith.
You can't take away from the guy the fact that he won three Super Bowls, 1,700 yards, got all the tough yards, blocked on defense, caught the ball. It's not his fault that he was on a great team, but I tell you what, it's part of the reason that they were great was because of Emmitt Smith. With all due respect to Aikman and Irvin, Emmitt Smith was more important than those two. So their success.
That's a good point.
Now, he was running behind this mammoth offensive line, and they're great,
and
they're almost all Hall of Famers. Yeah. Williams
and
Stepnoski and Larry Allen and Nate.
That's
Newton.
A great offensive line. NFL.
I mean, these guys are great, but he still
the football
got
life
yards.
Did a whole thing on him, right? It was amazing.
He played
and
with a separated shoulder, and he picked up the blitzes, and he caught the ball out of the backfield, and he got the tough yards. He didn't dance in the hole, and he only ran a 4.7, so he wasn't physically gifted with CJ2K speed, you know? I give it to Emmitt, and not because I'm a Dallas fan, really. I just respect what he did.
So let me ask you this, because I sort of see that argument. So let's say Emmitt four, when you go five, this is, you know, where you have to look at Dickerson, LaDainian. Where would you go? Dickerson or LaDainian? Because I can't.
Well, I would also throw O.J. Simpson in there.
And Orenthal, yeah.
And maybe Marshall Faulk.
Yeah. I'll just say this. Out of the young guys, AP to me, I have him tied at 10 with Marcus Allen. I have Marshall Faulk at 9. And I have Dorsett is up there, probably at 8. Orenthal at 7, Dickerson at 6, and then LaDainian and Marshall, and LaDainian at 5 and Emmitt at 4. So, you know, to me, though, let me ask you this. Do you put a knock on LaDainian for his playoffs? Would you put him out of the top 5? Is OJ better than LaDainian?
No. I don't know. Originally, I ranked OJ ahead of LaDainian. Originally, when I thought about this several years ago.
Right.
But I think LaDainian Tomlinson, that year when he scored 31 touchdowns.
He was dominant. He was the most dominant. For a couple years, he was the most dominant player in the NFL.
And he caught the ball, right? Something that a lot of these backs Brown and O.J.
And he was a great receiver.
He could have lined up, and many times he did, especially in – you know, in third down situations, like he could go out on a pattern as a slot receiver. And
would
so
you
did,
say
so
LaDainian and Marshall are the two best wide receivers of running back ever?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt.
For sure. And I got to give them credit for that, because not only did they actually catch the ball, but what they were able to do is spread defenses out and be a legitimate threat and maybe take a safety away from coverage, right? Or you have to bring in a nickel back to put on them. So I give those guys a ton of credit.
No, I think you have to, and that's, you know. But so then this is so hard to me because basically for me, I don't have Curtis Martin in my top 10, you know. I mean, because you throw Marcus Allen, and we all know how great Marcus Allen is. And you know, Dickerson, Dorsett, and those guys in there, you know, later on is, you know, the Bus and Franco and Martin. So two guys I want to ask you about. Curtis Martin, didn't even think about Edgerrin James, to be honest with you, when I thought about top 10 or even top 15. But Curtis Martin, and then probably number three in that list of best wide receiver running backs, Thurman Thomas. Where would you put Thurman Thomas and Curtis Martin, who are both in the Hall of Fame?
They're both 10 to 15. I would say they're both excellent running backs, and I think that they were both – they're not top five for sure, because you never looked at them and said, I need to game plan solely against these guys. You had to do that with Eric Dickerson, and you had to do that with Barry Sanders, and you had to do that to some degree with Emmett, but you certainly had to do that with Jim Brown. And Walter Payton, right?
And
so
even
they're not
Dorsett.
In the top five.
Dorsett was dynamic.
And Tony Dorsett, yeah. So they're 10 to 15 great players, but you never had this notion that you need to scheme solely to stop them. So that doesn't take anything away from their ability and their longevity and the fact that they won games. They're great. They're absolutely great players, but I think they're 10 to 15. Let me ask you, though, about the current crop of players. So the running backs that don't have enough yards under their belt. So let's start with, you know, Adrian Peterson, maybe a Steven Jackson, maybe a LeSean McCoy, maybe an Arian Foster. Tell me about the current crop of elite running backs.
Well, when I look at – I agree with what our caller Mike said. I mean, I think out of this current active group, like I said, Steven Jackson has got the most. And I think Steven Jackson's a Hall of Famer because, like those three we mentioned before, Steven Jackson's a very good wide receiver and has also played, like Walter, on a horrible team for years. He was hurt this year in Atlanta. I'd like to see him get one more big year, and I think, you know, he'll wind up with easily 12,000 yards before he's done if he plays a year or two more. So I think Steven Jackson, to me, I think he'll be a Hall of Famer, and I think he's had a great career and very consistent. AP, to me, I have
another
him tied at number 10. I think Peterson is a top 10 running back. He could even climb higher if he's healthy, but he's already got 10,000, Ray, just from 07 to 13. So to me, Adrian Peterson is dynamic like a Barry Sanders. You just can't say right now Adrian Peterson is a top five running back of all time. You know, or maybe somebody would say that. I just can't say that. You know, he's 27 all the time and just pure yards. You know, it's hard to project out. Like you said it. You said it best with Arian Foster. Arian Foster, we're thinking he's going to all of a sudden go somewhere. And then with these injuries, he might not wind up, you know, going up on this list. Oh, by the way, my mistake.
Here's another Marshawn Lynch.
Right. Well, but also I got to just give a shout out. I mean, he's way down to 33, but Earl Campbell's in my top 10. Earl Campbell's the man. Earl Campbell's right there. Probably put him, you know, 7 or 8. So Earl Campbell's a beast. You know, that's one of our favorite players.
That's the original beast mode. I'm going to call him the OB, the The original beast mode.
I like that. OB. He is OB, boss. I'm about my business, boss. I love Marshawn Lynch. Gosh, you have to go so far down. Where is he on the list? Maurice Jones-Drew is ahead of him. Chris Johnson's ahead of Lynch. But Lynch is all the way down at 52. You know, I don't know. I guess with Lynch, now that he's got a ring, he's got, you know, 7,300 yards, almost 7,400 yards, just from 07 to 13. Same amount as Adrian Peterson, 3,000 yards less. So what does that say to you about the difference of AP and Lynch? You don't think down on Lynch, but he's probably in the Hall of very good, right?
Other than injuries, AP was you know, fantastic, right? Every game he's played, he's been awesome. Just think about it this way. AP is 27th in the league right now with 10,115 yards. If he has two good seasons for him, and by Adrian Peterson standards, and that's 1,500 yards, he gets, let's say you add another 3,000 yards, he jumps up to be number 8. He passes Tony Dorsett and is on the heels of Jerome Bettis. So that's all it takes is two or three more years, and Adrian Peterson, you know, not only will crack the top 10 in runners, but he'll move up the all-time list, and especially if he can get some playoff success. So I think Adrian Peterson is really unbelievable. And the one caveat I have, remember I said that the numbers on offense are not as spectacular at the running back position. The one exception to that might be Shady McCoy if he keeps playing in this high-powered offense. If he can stay healthy and stay in this high-powered Chip Kelly offense, maybe he can put up ridiculous all-purpose yard stats, you know, running and catching the ball.
Right. Do you think the touches, though, and the hits will prevent him? I mean, I look at Charles. He's, what, from 08 to 13. I mean, this is what's so funny, right? Jamal, here's an example. Jamal Charles is great, and he, you know, we've talked about it on our show, over, you know, 5 yards a carry, right? But he's got 5,800 yards, and he's played one less year than Peterson. But he's all the way down at 91, and Peterson, you know, with just one more year, has got 5,000 more yards. That's crazy. So that tells you in this era how dominant Adrian Peterson is. I wanted to ask you, though, because he's also in this era, he's a little bit older, and Shady McCoy is at number 100. With 5,400. But just real quick, Frank Gore, and we've talked about it on the show before, is Frank Gore Hall of Famer, Ray?
No. He's the Hall of Very Good. He is the absolute epitome of Hall of Very Good.
He's got 9,900 yards.
I think he has 7,000-yard seasons. So
from
very
05 to 13.
Consistently very good. He's not better than Edgerrin James. And
that's a good point.
He was consistent, and he was a steady runner, and he's a very, very good runner. Deserves all the accolades, but you never went into those San Francisco games like really afraid of Frank Gore. You said, we need to stop him, especially 3-4 years ago when they didn't have the offense that they had now, when they were still trying to figure out the whole Alex Smith experiment. But at no point were you thinking to yourself, he's a top back, and he's so dynamic that we need to focus our defense stopping Frank Gore.
Is he the best Niner running back of all time, though? He's better than Roger Craig,
sure,
right?
For sure. Just because of the years, just because of the longevity. I mean, Rathman and Craig and Waters, those guys were good, and they were part of the Bill Walsh system. But I think they spread the ball out. They passed it a lot. Frank Gore has earned his yards and earned his stake at the top of the San Francisco running back list.
All right, well, we have to get ready, you know, to wind it down. Obviously, we stated, you know, and by the way, since, you know, I am a Steeler fan, I got to mention my man Franco Harris. He's in the top 15, right outside the top 10, but he's gotten disrespected over the years. You know, he did – Jim Brown used to rip him. He, you know, ran out of bounds sometimes, but, you know, looking back on it, maybe it was smart. He never, like – you know, cost the team a first down. Franco Harris has got 4 Super Bowl rings, and I thought, you know, overall, to me, I didn't like him ending it in Seattle, but he was a great running back. But I wanted to ask you, who, when you probably look at top 20, top 25, just in general, who's the most overrated running back? And maybe it could be somebody playing now, or, you know, that's, you know, it's almost unfair, but I got to ask it. Who's the most overrated running back maybe in NFL history?
Oh, wow. I never thought about overrated. Well, you know, a guy that, and I hate to say it's overrated because it's not, it's just a bad term to use, but I look at a guy like, maybe I'll take two guys, Curtis Martin and Jerome Bettis. And these guys were great, great running backs, very good, moved the ball forward. But, you know, they weren't the dynamic, and I think they're both Hall of Famers, but I don't think they're as dynamic, and they are, you schemed against them, and you shifted your defense to stop them. So that's not really overrated. That's just, you know, very good, but not excellent. So to me, it's hard to say any of these guys are overrated because they all. Anytime you run for 10,000 yards, that's consistency. That's consistent excellence. That's moving the ball forward against defenses. You know, I can't say it's overrated, but I'll say they won't be in that category of, you know, elite running backs. They're in that Hall of Fame, really good, excellent players, but not that next level, right? They're not on that the pedestal level that we talked about with, you know, Peyton and Jim Brown and these other guys.
Yeah, no, that's fair, man. Hey, listen, you know, great topic, great show. We'll have to see, you know, how people respond, you know, emails and Twitter and stuff. I think a lot of people, you know, have their opinion always on the top 10 running backs of all time. So you heard it from Ray and Tay. You know, we got Jim Brown, number one. Ray has got Walter, number two. I've got Barry, number two. And then we reverse it for number three. I got, you know, Walter, and he's got Barry. So top three backs. I mean, we both agree on the top three. So, you know, look, great show. We'll be back on Monday, you know, give you a little bit of the Sochi update and some of the Olympic fun. And you know, maybe tonight we'll see Blazers Pacers, two of the best teams going at it in the NBA. Could be a finals preview. Maybe there'll be some trades, and we'll definitely have some fun with the college basketball.
Have a great sports weekend, and we'll see you back on Monday.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for talking sports with fans. We're out.
We're out.
Peace.